Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine food Friday, March 15th. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the show, we welcome back our friend, author, and baker, Amy Halloran. Amy is a go-to on this program. She's an expert on flour. I believe she's a flour ambassador or a grain ambassador, one of the two, or maybe both. And she wants to talk about Irish soda bread today and corned beef and cabbage. Why? Because it's obligatory. It's St. Patrick's Day, and that's if it was St. Andrew's Day, we'd do a show about haggis, and no one wants to hear that. If you want to talk about Irish food, right? And who doesn't? 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Yes. Soda bread, corned beef, cabbage, you, Amy Halloran, right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's a Food Friday, and joining us today is our friend Amy Halloran. Amy is a writer and activist seeking to change the way we feed each other, a historian, somebody who works to add social value and economic viability to farms and communities. She's the author of The New Bread Basket and is a superb baker. You could do just about anything in the old kitchen. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can email us as well, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. That's the email address, and the number is 800-348-2551. Well, you might remember Amy Halloran because she bailed us out after the fun drive a few weeks ago. Her regularly scheduled appearance is today. Amy Halloran, you're back again. How you doing?
I'm good, Ray. How are you?
You're not in the studio.
Well, I have been needing to have my knee operated on, just a little meniscus cleanup. And so I'm across the river, sadly, from you, recuperating on the sofa.
Well, I'm so glad you did the show anyway. You're not full of painkillers, are you?
No.
Oh, good.
No.
Okay, so you'll be lucid throughout the, well, more or less, throughout the entire
as
show.
As lucid as I can get, Ray.
Now, you said to you, well, via yeah. email that you wanted to talk a little about Irish soda bread and corned beef, the usual St. Paddy's Day stuff, St. Patrick's Day. Are you of Irish extraction?
A little bit on both sides. So I'm a Halloran, and I'm also a Sweeney. There's some Polish in there, too, and then a lot of general American muttness. but we definitely have a lot of Irish happening, and I have a great loyalty to soda bread because not just because of my heritage, but because it uses just leavening, and I'm fascinated by the rise of chemical leaveners in America and around the world. There we go with some more soda bread beeping.
You're making soda bread now while you're convalescing.
I am.
Wow, that's impressive.
I am,
you never stop.
I could.
So what do you mean?
I could have if I. Yeah.
What do you mean about the leavening? Yeah.
Yeah. So bread is generally, you know, flour, water, salt, yeast.
Right.
But that can be different. In the instance of soda bread, it's flour, salt, soda, or bicarbonate of soda, or bread soda, as they call it in Ireland, and sour milk or buttermilk. And
yeah.
bread is a reflection of whatever ingredients are around you.
Yeah.
It's soft wheat rather than, because Ireland doesn't have many deserts. And bread wheat is a desert crop.
Huh.
So we have the bread reflects what's available. Wait. And you got a question?
Well, I've never heard you say that bread is made of desert wheat before. I never even thought of that before.
Yeah. So it's, you know, the traditional home or the beginning home of bread wheats with lots of gluten and lots of the type of gluten that's going to hold a dough up is from desert areas. And there's lots of varieties of wheat, soft wheats and hard wheats, that have evolved in the 12,000 years or so we've been courting wheat from the wild. So soft wheats will, they have literally, their kernels are softer, literally softer. And hard wheats, it's harder and almost, you could describe it as a little bit glassy looking.
Yeah.
And it's intense summer heat that allow it to pack on the protein that allows for the expansive nature of what we think of as, you know, pizza, bread, bagels, all that kind of stuff, those kind of leavening things. But a soft wheat works really well. You know, something that matures in, say, a moist summer environment, it makes terrific quick breads and soft breads. You know, I love pancakes, as you may know.
Yes,
and
I do.
Any kind of, and so soft wheats are really, really good for soda bread. This year I'm adding a little bit of rye to my soda bread, and I actually got the last time I was on, a caller recommended trying some Irish flour from one of the Irish stores.
Yeah.
And so I got an Irish flour, and we're experimenting with that today. But to all our wonderful listeners, you don't have to just go there. All-purpose flour is going to be very good. Spelt flour, if you have spelt makes terrific soda bread. And rye is a nice addition. I love whole grains, and you can make it all the way from whole grains. It's going to be more dense, of course. But the soda breads that are in and out of the oven today, I used a recipe from Ballymallow. It's a cookery school in Ireland, and I'm probably saying it wrong because I'm really famous for mispronouncing things. But it's a super simple recipe that is 450 grams of flour plus a teaspoon of baking soda, a teaspoon of salt, and 400 milliliters of buttermilk.
Ooh.
Now, you can use a combo of yogurt and milk. You can make your own soured milk with a little bit of apple cider or apple cider vinegar and milk. I do recommend using the dairy if you can, because that's what is traditional, and it also makes it a little bit softer.
You know, believe it or not, there's not a great deal of Irish ancestry in my family, but from what I know of soda bread, it all sort of looks the same. Is there a great variation in soda breads?
Well, there's not in America, probably. You know, we get our standard breads, and it often has caraway seeds in it and raisins or currants. It'll usually have sugar and butter as well, which is more like a tea cake. The traditional Irish soda bread is meant to be just a part of a meal, and you use a lot of butter on it, but there's not butter in it. So you wouldn't notice the variety unless you went looking for it.
In general, and maybe you don't know the answer to this, I know you got your recipe from an Irish cooking school, but in general, the stuff that is trotted out here in almost an obligatory fashion every St. Patty's Day, you know, is that authentic? Is the American version of soda bread authentic?
For American soda bread, right? Like, tradition is where it's from. You know, every time we make something, we're putting our own spin on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not a loyalist. I do like variety, but so I can't answer that definitively, Ray. Sorry.
You're such a historian, though. I would think that you would be on the side of tradition.
Oh. But I'm also on the side of understanding history for ourselves and understanding that history has many storytellers. You know, they say history is told by the conquerors.
Right.
So there's really a lot of facets to history. Okay, so if we were in Ireland during the famine, and thank goodness we're not, we might have access to just a wholemeal flour, probably, because sifted flour would have been for, well, more sifted flour would have been for richer people. And we would have had some buttermilk, hopefully, and soda and salt. And that, I think, would be the purest kind of soda bread.
Yeah.
But, you know, I made a couple of versions here today because I want to explore a fuller range of the food. And I started, I actually have a little video I should email you. WMHT did a video of me making soda bread a few years ago. And in that recipe, I just have, I add butter and I add maple syrup to have a little sweetener, because I knew my audience. And so I have a couple of loaves today that are plain with raisins. And then I have a couple of small loaves that I added some maple syrup to, and the butter.
Oh,
added the butter.
Well, you know, I had no idea you were also working with the competition, but it's fine with me. Amy Halloran is our guest today. Let's take a quick break. 800-348-2551. Soda bread and some very not apropos music at all, but let's hear Java with Al Hurt. Yeah, let's see Lucky the Leprechaun dance to that one. It's Vox Pop Food Friday. 800-348-2551 is the number. Amy Halloran is back. Amy, again, a billion, trillion thanks for stepping in at the end of our fun drive when I was sure there was going to be no Food Friday, and we got done with the drive so quickly a few weeks ago that you were there.
Oh, that was so fun, Ray. And that was so, I mean, all of this is always fun.
And that was right? Pre-surgery, and now you're how many loaves have you baked today?
They're really small. So can we even call them loaves?
I don't know. Little pucks? What do you call them?
I made two batches.
Yeah.
I made two batches, and I cut crosses in each of them. This is another little fun fact about the soda bread. Some people say that, sometimes the tradition is understood that it's a blessing to have the cross on the top. Other people say it's to let the fairies get out, because fairies are not really good things in Ireland. They're little devils. And so you got to get your fairies out. And then there's just the straight up practical notion of you've got this big dough, and if you cut crosses in it and you don't have a really good, you don't have a 20th or 21st century oven you're using.
Yeah.
When you're originally making your sourdough. I mean your soda bread.
Yeah.
It's, you might be making it over a fire inside a kind of cast iron improvised little oven.
Yeah.
And so you want to cut the crosses so that steam escapes from the center and more heat gets in from lots of other points of entrance.
No, that makes perfect sense. Yeah. That's a practical reason. Amy Halloran is our guest. The reason I asked about how many loaves you made, I mean, you're probably using crutches or something. I don't know how you're doing it in the kitchen.
Well, I actually can hobble now.
Oh, good.
And so I haven't been doing it for too long. And besides, I have lots of neighbors who need to eat the bread, right? The neighbors have been feeding me for a few days.
Yeah.
Between the last time I saw you, Ray, can I tell you about my bread adventures?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. So I went down to New York for a rye talk at New York Distilling. And there was this elaborate evening of rye breads put on by Black Rooster Foods and rye whiskey from the New York Distilling. And we had a conversation about the Jewish history of rye. I worked with the Rehrer Center,
okay,
which is in Kingston, New York. Mm-hmm. And that is a bakery museum. So, of course, I mean, it's a culture. It's a center that's not strictly for baking, but it started out as a bakery. So it has all of my heart, and I love working with them.
Cool.
And an organization called The Neighborhood. We had a great talk about rye, and Ellen Gray of last week fame, she made some Mandelbrot that were really delicious. And we talked about the history of twice-baked cookies and how they travel across cultures. Mandelbrot being, Jewish. And then you've got biscotti and you've got rusk cakes or cake rusk or cracker rusk, another twice-baked. So all these foods just show up. Here, and here. It's not like there's a cultural exclusivity on how a grain is used. So that was one night.
Yeah.
And then last week, I went to Rhode Island.
Really?
I did. The Bread Bakers Guild of America is a trade organization to support the education of artisan and craft baking. And there's professional and will be professional bakers who are members. We met at the Johnson & Wales University, which is a culinary school in Providence, and it was their spring break. So there's a number of professors at Johnson & Wales who are members of the Bread Bakers Guild, and they organized this fabulous conference, baking education conference. And it was just an incredible immersion in so many different baking techniques. There were hands-on classes, there were demonstrations, there was a little trade show with, all kinds of industry, chocolate people and oven people. It was really very, very, it was a great way to begin my confinement, to prepare for my confinement.
Your confinement. Do you get the famous treatment? Are you famous because you've written books and stuff? Do people say, oh, there's Amy Halloran?
I'm flower famous.
Are
so
you?
They might not know. Yeah, they don't know my face, but I'll introduce myself as Amy. And then when they figure out that they know me and they know my book, sometimes I get a little fangirling going on. It's really sweet. It's really sweet. But I just love to have access to this profession. Here's a craft that people have been doing in one way or another, in the home and out of the home. And I'm so curious about what it takes to make bread and pastries, what it takes to make a bakery survive. And there were lots of classes on that as well. There were a lot of classes on fresh milling, which is one of my favorite things. So it was a really extraordinary thing. And yeah. Ray, one yes. other thing I did while I was there.
Yeah.
There is an antique stove hospital in Little Compton, Rhode Island.
I'm sorry. Say that again. There's an antique stove hospital.
So there's an antique stove hospital, a place where a father and a son repair cast iron stoves, gas, wood, coal stoves. It's really, really neat. And so, since I'm curious about the history of this area and bread, of course, the cast iron stove history, I mean, this area by our area,
right.
Not Providence and Little Compton. I needed to go there to look at some other stoves and hear about what they knew. It was a delightful tour. Emery is a retired science teacher from high school, and he wanted to repair a wood stove of his own.
Yeah.
And it turned into this business 40 years ago. So it's this huge business, and the stoves are unbelievable. It's just crazy to see the technology and the beauty, the usefulness and how we've moved away from it.
I'm guessing there was not a long line to get in this place, right?
No, but I brought some cookies all the same.
Oh, cool.
I wanted to make sure to butter up my informant.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, you know, oh, yeah, our stove broke down. Yeah, we'll drive to Providence. That's a good plan. That's very interesting, though. Amy Halloran is our guest, and it's St. Patrick's Day, don't you know? Let's go to the phones at 800-348-2551. We'll start with our friend Joan. Hello, Joan in Schenectady.
Hello, Ray. Hello, Amy.
Hi, Joan.
Hi. I had to call almost just to say hi. But I do have questions, especially about Irish food. Thank you for the recipe for the soda bread, first off, because, well, I was going to ask for that. All I got to do is translate grams and milliliters, but I can do that.
Sure.
And thanks. So you already answered one of my questions. And, Amy, also how wonderful it is to find out that we only share 1 degree of separation through your cousin. So that's delightful. Now, do you know about Culcannon, the mashed potato Irish?
I'm so glad you brought that up. I love Culcannon. You know, we when people think of St. Patrick's Day, they want to go heavy meat. But if you think of Ireland, a very poor country, it's not like there was a lot of meat hanging around. So Culcannon is potatoes and greens, basically. And you can make it with a lot of different greens. And you can you can put in a lot of butter and, you know, make something really, really lush. You can use you can use kale and cabbage. You can just use kale. It's a great dish. Do you like to make it, Joan?
Yes, I do, and I've never been known if I'm doing anything close to authentic, but and I don't usually have cabbage hanging around. But what was I usually putting in it? Potatoes, and I've done it with turnips. I think my mom did it with turnips.
Turnips are beautiful. Yep.
Yeah. So basically, it's totally authentic to play with any of the greens I love. So,
yeah.
Okay, that's a good answer, too.
Just don't put any kale in
there. I'd ask you more. No kale? Well, I know, Ray, how you feel about kale.
St. Patrick would smite you if you did that. Don't do that.
Yeah, and I also absolutely love snakes, so Patrick and I do a lot of talking.
Okay, fair enough.
Oh, about that cast iron stove thing, did you see any small models that can be used outdoors for bread baking?
Well, okay. I mean, sure. People would have a summer stove maybe, or they would bring their regular size stove out on the porch. Another improvement they would do over the summer is they would put an oven, you know, like a little addition on top of the circles to just make a little oven there, and have some boiling water that would go down into it. I fully plan to put a some kind of a stove into my yard to be a canning stove, because that was common all over. You really shouldn't be boiling masses of water indoors in summertime.
Right.
You should be outside, right?
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Sure. Okay. Well, Joan. We're going to let you go there, kid. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend. 800-348-2551 is our number. And it's Amy Halloran today. Ostensibly it's about soda bread and Irish things, but whatever you want. This email came in from Elise. Is there any way I can make a 100% whole grain soda bread without it being so dense? I usually use sprouted spelt, and that's from Elise.
Okay. So I generally bake all whole grain. So I think the thing to remember when you're going all whole grain is that the bran that's included in that is thirstier. So you want to up your level of liquids or fats, and it will be less dense. You might want to sub a couple of eggs in there, a little more butter, and that will leaven it. And you want to make sure you don't want to overdo it with baking soda. But one trick I use with whole grains across the board is I make sure to add about a quarter teaspoon of baking soda to each cup of whole grain flour when I'm making a quick bread or a pancake or a cookie. And of course, you have to have a little bit of acid to make sure that that works. But there's lots of ways that there's acid already happening in your food, such as if you're making banana bread, you already have an acid. If you have some honey in there, that's acting as an acid. But that little bit of extra baking soda can help it feel more light, or just a little bit extra liquid.
All right. Amy Halloran's our guest today on Food Friday. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. While you were talking to Joan from Schenectady, Zach was in my ear on the talkback. Zachary Molloy, by the way. So I think there might be some Irish there. Said Culcannon is
maybe
incredible. And so I don't know if I've ever had it. I thought it was a place, but I guess I'm wrong. Patrick writes in, subject heading rye and soda bread. Hey, when Amy says a bit of rye and soda bread, how much is a little bit? Well, a couple shots, right? No.
We can go to town here. Okay, so it really is your tolerance for whole grains, your family's tolerance for whole grains. You could use, especially if you had a more sifted rye. Rye comes in a lot of layers of, light rye, medium rye, dark rye.
Yeah.
And that refers to how much bran is in there. So if you're using a light rye and you could go 100%, you could use Guinness as your liquid for your soda bread. I swear to God.
Have you ever done that though?
I'm sure I have. I've done.
You've baked
sure
everything.
I have.
All right, fair enough.
Where does flour go? Everywhere. but you could, I guess I would advise if you're starting out with rye and you don't bake a lot with rye, maybe use a third rye to start and just get a feel for the density of it and
is it more dense?
And play with it from there. Yeah, definitely. It's more dense. Rye is totally different than either soft wheat or a hard wheat. It's just a different kind of grain and protein. It still has gluten, but it can be gummier.
It changes the flavor profile too, though. In addition to the texture, I know when you have rye whiskey, it's spicy often, and rye bread can have a little spice to it too.
Oh yeah, and that often depends on what people put into the rye.
Yeah.
Very common rye bread in America is caraway, and so people will think I don't like rye bread because I don't like caraway seeds.
Yeah.
But that is to help. That's a flavor that's often added because it has digestive boosts, fennel, caraway, all those kinds of things. And then you get into some darker, Northern European ryes, and they'll have fennel in them and anise. Russian ryes may have coriander in it. There's a lot of, Baltic ryes the same. There's a lot you can do flavor-wise, but it does start out with more of an earthiness. And while we're talking about rye, I want to encourage people to try rye in, say, brownies.
What?
Rye and, yes!
No.
Oh my gosh, Ray, next time I come in, I'll be bringing you 100% rye brownie or cake. Because rye plus chocolate.
Really?
They're really good friends.
Okay.
Oh, wonderful. Like those, you've got a lot of different flavor neighborhoods with cocoa and with rye, and they complement each other. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. Amy Halloran's our guest today. I didn't know that. 800-348-2551. Let's grab one more call here before the next break, and then we will go back to the phones on the other side of that. Mark in Pittsfield has been waiting a while. Mark, go ahead.
Wonderful. There's so many things there. I learned to be a baker at a Jewish rye bakery here in Pittsfield, so lots going on. I also like rye. I like it when you mention rye. It's very healthy, and it's great that you mentioned the whiskey part. I would claim that as well. And many things to do with rye. Wonderful. And So I thought I'd also mention that I have your book, and I was looking for your comment on yeast. So with all this said, I was writing a book, a article about beer being liquid bread, and rye is perfect for beer, rye is perfect for bread. And there is a Chatham brewery that makes a rye beer, which is wonderful as well.
Huh.
And then the last thing I was going to mention is that there's an Irish saying with one of the fellows said that if you wanted to put Guinness in the batter to make the Irish bread, he asked his wife if he could pass it through his kidneys first. And, of course, she didn't want to have that happen.
That's nice. Okay.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Rye is a wonderful thing to play with. Yes, yes, I highly encourage it.
Now, did
but
you actually
maybe not.
Go ahead, Amy? I'm sorry.
Go all that. Yeah.
Ferdinand Metz from Culinary would appreciate this conversation as well. Just as you mentioned, Johnson and Wales. So those are wonderful references, and do appreciate you being there. Any comments on yeast would be wonderful.
Okay, yeast.
What about yeast? I mean, yeast is an incredible ingredient.
Yeah. What were you looking for, Mark?
I was looking for it in your book, and I didn't seem to find it. Maybe you could tell me where to find it. The topic.
Oh.
Okay.
I don't remember where I talked about yeast in my book, but where can we go with yeast? It didn't get patented till 1870. In America,
yeast
and yeast because so the history. This is why chemical leaveners did so well in America is and by chemical leaveners I mean baking soda and baking powder because we didn't have a big sourdough tradition going on with English baking being the root of New England and what we replicated. The yeast, quote unquote, that people used for their breads were emptins or the dregs of making beer. So they didn't keep a sourdough culture necessarily, although there are, if you look at early American cookbooks, there are tons and tons of recipes for making your own kind of yeast at home. It was a different tradition that we're made from.
Hey, Amy, let me just stop you. We'll pick this up on the other side of the break. We're way overdue, and the Irishman over there in the control room is going to be upset. So we'll take a quick break. Mark,
we don't want that.
We'll let you go, and then we'll have Amy expound more on yeast on the other side. Is noted Irishman by way of Red Bank, New Jersey, Bill Basie of the orchestra here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. Now, before we get to the next call, which happens to be from New Jersey, let's just talk more about yeast because it's uplifting.
It's a big topic.
Right.
So the commercialization of yeast in America was done by the Fleischmann's Company in 1870. And it was first adopted in urban centers because it needed refrigeration at the very beginning. And so refrigeration was not a universal thing for quite a long time. And the yeast needed refrigeration to keep it fresh. There's still a really popular use of yeast or type of yeast to use is fresh yeast that needs to be refrigerated. And you can get it either from a bakery that has a big supply or from food co-ops. There's you can get fresh yeast, and that is it adds a whole nother flavor to what you're baking. As a matter of fact, when I do some Easter baking, I'm going to make sure I get fresh yeast so that I can use that rather than the dried yeast that I keep in my freezer.
Let me stop you there. Now, as you well know, I don't think I've ever baked anything, but you see the yeast in packets, it's dry. You say fresh yeast is better. Why?
It just has another bunch of layers of flavor, or allows more layers of flavor to develop. So, you know, and this is one of the reasons people argue for sourdough as well, is that you are sourdough, you're creating a community, a cultured community of a variety of wild yeast and bacterias that you are cultivating to grow your bread. And commercial yeast is growing the same kind of yeast over and over again. So that's a narrower stream of beginnings and a narrower possibility of flavors.
All right, that makes sense to me. Amy Halloran is our guest. It's 800-348-2551. And now let's go down to New Jersey and our friend. Well, I think it's our friend. Is it Ellen?
Good afternoon.
Hello, Ellen. How are you?
Hello. I'm well. I'm just, hello, Amy. I'm just checking in to make sure that knee wasn't repaired at the cast iron stove hospital. How are you?
No. I'm good. It's coming along. Thank you.
Good. I'm glad you're on the mend. I just wanted to pop in and say that if you're thinking, you know, if you're thinking about breads and baked goods across cultures, it's also important to note that in the Native American culture, they were some of the earliest peoples to document leavening breads with what was a precursor to baking soda. They used pearl ash, you know, which was kind of from wood, and that was an early form of a leavener. And they also, because not everybody had stoves available, you know, these were things that were often cooked on coals or on griddles, which was also the case in Ireland because not everybody had a stove. And over time, if you travel, let's say, to Canada, there are different approaches to Irish soda bread, different, you know, ingredients incorporated. I would say that over time, Irish soda bread, which was pretty dowdy and humble, became sweetened and, you know, people started adding more things to it. I would recommend to you, Amy, for medicinal purposes, if you want to add some Guinness plumped raisins or currants to your Irish soda bread, you can also use some old-fashioned oats in that Irish soda bread and maybe some nuts. You could even, you know, sort of flavor the butters that go with it. But
interesting.
It has evolved and gotten a little bit, you know, more she-she than it once was.
She-she. What do you think, Amy?
I think it's great. And I'm so grateful, Ellen, that you brought that up about the Native American uses of pearl ash. Because that's an era that I'm not very well versed in. I read about that today as I was getting, and I thought, okay, I'm sure this is true, but I don't know enough about it to say it. So I thank you for bringing that up. Yeah. And they would have used
you bet.
Corn, right? Yeah.
Possibly maize or corn in, you know, in the mix as well, which also in a rye bread or, you know, kind of a multi-grain bread, you would certainly use maize or corn and would be delicious with rye.
Oh, it would be so good. Corn and rye, as well as rye and chocolate are good pals.
You know, I really got to get you two.
Corn and rye.
I got to get you both on the same show, and then I'll just nod. I'll just let you guys have at it. Ellen Gray, I want to... Go ahead.
Too much fun.
Yeah,
much
it would
fun.
Be fun.
It would be.
Ellen Gray, you were on last week, and you were fabulous. And then somehow you got roped into sending pies up here for Pie Day yesterday, and they were fabulous. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you so much. Love doing it. All right, bye-bye, everybody. Have a great weekend, and happy St. Patrick's and all the things.
And also with you. Thanks for
calling. Thank you, Ellen.
All right, Amy Halloran is our guest today, 800-348-2551. A couple of emails here, and then we'll get back to the phones. This is from Fran in Gallatin. I use King Arthur AP flour, which has a gluten level of 11.7%. I also have some of their cake flour, which is 10%. Can I use the cake flour to make soda bread?
Oh, that's a trick question. I am not sure. I'm not sure. That's my answer.
Okay.
I would mix both of them because I haven't really used cake flour, and I can't remember off the top of my head whether they do more than sift. I would just want to make sure that it has enough body. You know, cake flour is for cakes, and we need a little bit more body, I think,
okay,
in the bread.
All right, and then
so half and half is what I'd recommend. Yeah,
let's go outside of your comfort zone just a little bit now. Fran goes on.
Okay,
I'm supposed to watch my salt intake while cooking the corned beef. Would bringing it to a boil, then changing the water, then simmering it till done reduce the amount of salt in the beef?
Theoretically, I'm not a nutritionist, so we could say that. But I would recommend before you cook your corned beef, soak it and change the water, you know, soak it in fresh water a couple of times.
Yeah.
And that will diminish how much salt you have in it.
That's a great question. Yeah. And I know it'll be too late, Fran, but Nicole Rodriguez is going to be on in a couple of weeks, and she is a dietitian nutritionist, and she could probably answer that question. And then there was an email from Clara. One of my favorite cookie recipes is a salted rye cookie. Not a salt, salted rye cookie. I was a bakery manager in a cafe outside Cleveland, Ohio, a number of years ago, and this was a regular customer favorite back then. You ever make a salted rye cookie?
I did read a recipe for it recently, but I haven't made it. So I'll have to go backwards, find the recipe, and do it.
All right, Amy Halloran is our guest. One more email, and then back to the phones, 800-348-2551. And you can also send an email here while we still have some time left in the program, voxpop@wamc.org. Andrew writes, will a frozen pizza dough rise on the counter like a second proof? Do you think I can get it to rise in the air enough like a fresh dough?
I don't know. My guess on that would be they have engineered these things to do their business in their very own way. And so I think you might end up with something gummy if you don't follow directions. Or I don't know if he's actually talking about just taking a ball of frozen dough and letting that rise on the counter.
I think that's what he means. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Okay.
Treat it like you would a dough. Let it rise a little bit more. Roll it out or do your spinning wonders in the air. And even let it rest again after you roll it out and let it go to town.
All right. Let's go back to the phone lines with Amy Halloran, 800-348-2551 and to Schenectady. Nancy, you're on.
Hi. I was wondering, I have to say, in the meantime, I've heard the mention of caraway seed, which apparently our guest here today doesn't care for.
Well, Amy, right? Do you care about it, Amy?
I care for it, but it's got its own place. I don't want people to feel offended by rye because they don't like caraway.
Ah, that's
I want
the
them
point.
To give it all the shots they can. Yeah.
So go on.
Well, here's my original question I was going to ask. Where the idea, I mean, obviously your basic recipe for Irish soda bread does not include caraway seed, but I've seen it sold with caraway seed, and I've actually made it with caraway seed myself. I didn't know if there's a place where that came in or if it's just people doing their own thing or how that came about. I have a second question, too, about fish.
Sure.
So not in soda bread, no.
All right, go ahead, Nancy.
My second question is, with Irish cooking, and people always make their traditional, quote, traditional corned beef and cabbage, I was thinking about using like a kippered herring with corned beef, just with the potatoes and cabbage instead of using corned beef. And I don't know, it seems to me Ireland being a nation and that it would be a natural thing for them to be using fish.
Huh.
I think you are onto something there. Now, this is the thing about corned beef and cabbage. I was reading up on that today too, and it is corned beef and cabbage is more of an Irish American thing than an actual Irish St. Patrick's Day celebration. Yep, you hit the nail on the head with that. As an island nation, fish is going to be very, very common. While Ireland used to export corned beef, it was sold for export, not for home use. And the tradition, as it's traced in America, of corned beef is that Jewish people, Irish people, and Italian people were settled in the slums, all living together. And the corned beef corned briskets from a Jewish butcher would feel familiar in its bacon-like taste, because Irish people would have more bacon than actual corned beef in Ireland, as I understand it. And so that's where it came from, is the 19th century melting-ish pot of America. Okay. Yeah.
Well, Nancy, thanks a lot for that. I appreciate it. A couple minutes left here. Amy Halloran, how's the knee holding up?
Doing great. Thanks, Ray.
Really? Okay. And did you try the bread while we were hanging out here?
No, because I'm talking.
Well, have a bite.
I want to get a mouthful.
All right.
Okay. I'll try it.
Which one are you going to try?
I think I'm going to try the initial one that's just rye and no butter or sugar. I'm going to try that. And you know what's really interesting in looking at these breads, Ray?
What?
The differences. So the one that has a little bit of maple syrup in it, it's showing it's a much nicer color. One of the reasons we add sweeteners to baked goods is that they caramelize. And so the one without any sweetener is a little pale and not as appetizing to the eye. But I am going to break off a piece now.
Okay, here we go.
It smells great.
Adventures in Radio. Amy Halloran eats. All right. Okay.
Oh, it's terrible.
Really? Really?
Absolutely terrible.
No, you're kidding.
No, it's not.
Did
it's
you
not
slather it
at
with
all.
With sweet creamery butter?
I'm walking over to the butter station because the butter is not by the oven in our house because it would melt.
I knew you were a bread nut, but you have a butter station. I think that's tremendous. That's great.
I just made that up.
That's pretty cool.
But yes, we really have to have about 5 pounds of butter in the house at all times, or we feel like the oil's low. The engine's going to stop.
I feel the same way.
We're going to break the whole car.
You know why? Because butter, if things go really, really south and things, there's real trouble, butter is pretty handy stuff. I mean, it's nutritious and delicious, right?
That equals flavor.
And it's
a wealth, you know, to have that hanging around makes you feel very good. And it's very German, right? The way a German will spread butter on top of a piece of bread compared to an American.
My father would spread butter on pizza crusts from the Del Mar Tavern way back when. Well, the pizza at the Del Mar Tavern, let's just say it was a little dry. And so he would butter the crusts, and that's why all the Grafts since have had cholesterol issues. It's amazing. All right, Amy Halloran, we're about done here. How do people keep up with your goings-on?
Well, you can sign up for my newsletter, amyhalloran.substack.com. It's called Dear Bread, and I write letters to bread fans about every week or two. I also have an Instagram where I'm Flour Ambassador.
Yes, you are.
F-L-O-U-R. Yep. And I have a website that has a lot of my writings and also resources for fresh flour, and that's amyhalloran.net.
You are the best. Now relax, have some soda bread, and heal up, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot, Ray. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Support comes from the Inn at Saratoga, a historic lodging house featuring guest rooms, private events, dining, and local live entertainment in downtown Saratoga Springs. The Inn at Saratoga.com for details. And Swords and Strategy Fencing Club, Amsterdam, New York, offering open fencing and training for ages middle school and up, for fun, for fitness, for glory. Information at swordsandstrategy.com. On guard! All right, that's it for today. That's it for the week. It was a fun week, right? Just by the premise. It was a fun week. And we're going to be back on Monday, and we'll have a Medical Monday for you. Thanks to everybody who called and wrote in. Thanks to Amy Halloran. Thanks to Zach Malloy. Thanks to Barb King, who screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Have a splendid weekend.